Hello, everybody. Welcome to another fantastic episode of F This Movie. We're talking baseball tonight with my main man, Alex Lawson. How are you, Alex?
Oh, you know, the smell of the grass, the crack of the bat, the sound of the cheers in the stands.
What are you describing?
Oh, well, I'm, you know, the stuff that's going on in my apartment right now, pretty much. No. You know, general revelry at a baseball game.
That's baseball.
That's baseball. This is going to be a really sort of laborious task if we have to walk you through all the minutia.
You are absolutely going to have to walk me through all the minutia. Tonight we're talking about Bull Durham, the 1988 baseball romantic comedy with Kevin Costner and Tim Robbins and Susan Sarandon, written and directed by Ron Shelton, what do you call him? I mean, all the guy does is sports movies, pretty much.
Sort of the auteur of the 80s and 90s sports film.
Yeah.
He hasn't really made anything that I like since, like, Tin Cup, which was 96, I think, or 97 or something.
So have you seen Dark Blue?
I have seen Dark Blue, but I mean, and I don't actually hate that, but I was talking about...
Sports-wise, got it, okay.
But Dark Blue's okay.
Yeah, I like Dark Blue.
I did not like Hollywood Homicide.
I actually do kind of like Hollywood Homicide.
Yeah, we've actually talked about this before. you acknowledge its flaws.
Of course.
As far as sports stuff, he sort of had the market cornered on that for a time.
Yeah.
And sort of has gotten away from it. This was like his thing back in this era. So.
Right. And Bull Durham is kind of the movie that started it.
Yeah, pretty much. And I know what you're all thinking out there. Bull Durham, baseball comedy from 88, so relevant.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I like to think of myself as the F This Movie panelist who's forever breaking down barriers and, like, setting new, you know, standards for the show, because we've had a lot of firsts when mm-hmm. I'm on the show, mm-hmm. as you know. Mm-hmm. We discussed the first Best Picture winner with Crash.
Right, right.
And we did the first sort of, you know, cross-country F This Movie when I moved to Virginia, where I'm at now.
Yeah.
And now we're doing the first sports movie. We've been doing this for, I don't know, a couple of months now, and we haven't had any sports movies yet.
No, there's absolutely a reason for that, and we're going to spend the next hour
yes.
realizing why that is.
Okay.
I'm only kidding, but we're getting ahead of ourselves, obviously, because
yes,
we got to do all the business. So you're listening to F This Movie. There's a million different ways to find us, more like four, but you can find us at fthismovie.blogspot.com, where there's podcasts and there's also some lists and links and stuff up there that is non-podcast related, so there's more content than just the podcast if you want to check that out. You can mm-hmm. find us in the iTunes store. You can find us on DVD Verdict Presents at dvdverdictpresents.com. Thank you to Michael Staley and everybody at DVD Verdict for carrying this show. You can be our friend on Facebook. You can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. And we've gotten some very nice email from listeners, and I would like more nice email.
Absolutely.
I don't want mean email. Or
are we getting a lot of that as well?
No, we actually haven't gotten any, but I want to keep that streak alive is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And
head that off the past.
Yeah, just nice email. I like nice email.
Nice email, nice. I mean, we always welcome suggestions. We've done some listener shows.
Yeah.
Let's keep that going.
So before we start talking about Bull Durham, Alex, have you seen anything good lately?
I have, and I'm really happy to report this. For a while, I didn't see a whole lot, but I actually saw a lot of stuff. I finally did see, Scott Pilgrim, 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
I hadn't, yet seen it. I really, really like that. And much like you said, when you had seen it and I hadn't, I really want to see it again, because... You know, much like you said, I have found myself looking back on it and thinking, oh man, that was really kind of great. And then I've actually been talking about it with other people who said, did you notice
whatever
it might be? And of course I say, well, no, I was distracted by the other 9,000 things that were happening.
You always have to lie. You always have to say, yeah, of course I noticed that.
I'm something of a novice at this. I hate to pull the curtain back.
Lie always.
Always. Okay, good tip.
I lie on all these I haven't even seen half the movies we've talked about on these podcasts.
Full mea culpa. Yeah. I mean, I didn't even see Scott Pilgrim. No.
No, wow. All right. See, you're learning. Uh-huh. Very good.
I saw it. I did see it. But yeah, I really liked it. Edgar Wright has officially attained he probably had it before, but I mean, this really cemented the I will see literally anything he does. And like I said, I was there before, but the reason that this really hammered it home is because I'm actually not there was a lot of reasons for me not to like Scott Pilgrim. I'm not a huge fan of the source material. I don't really like those graphic novels as much as some of my other friends. I'm a little burnt out on Michael Cera.
Yeah.
I'm not even the hugest Jason Schwartzman fan at this point because I feel like he's never been as good as he was in Rushmore, and that was in 1998.
Yeah.
But even forgiving all that, for as much as you can have issues with the main protagonist and the main antagonist in a movie, I really, really enjoyed it. So that's great. Can't recommend Scott Pilgrim highly enough. People have probably seen it by now, although the numbers would suggest otherwise.
Yeah, not that many people have seen it.
So go see it.
Yeah.
It's really good while it's still around, while you have the chance. And then let's see what else. Last weekend I saw Get Low.
Okay, how's Get Low? I haven't seen it.
I cannot recommend it highly enough.
Okay.
Everybody in it is really working at the top of their game. Obviously, you know, Bill Murray is always going to do really great stuff, and he's not even really at the forefront of this, but he makes the most of what he has. There's some classic Bill Murray moments that if you've go ahead.
Compare it to his work in The Man Who Knew Too Little.
Oh,
would you say he knows too little in this movie, or does he know just enough?
Well, see, he knows that's what makes this movie so great, because he knows just about enough. Now,
okay.
On the other hand, comparing it with his work in something like, what's that elephant picture?
Larger Than Life?
Yeah, Larger Than Life.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if he'll ever be that good again.
Well, he was working opposite an elephant.
Well, I mean, what are you going to do?
It makes everybody look good. Look what it did for Danny Glover in Operation Dumbo Drop.
Dumbo Drop and Ray Liotta. Well, here he's working opposite Robert Duvall, largely, who has elephant-like qualities, maybe. no.
Giant tusks and tough skin.
Also, good memory. But he's great, too. In all seriousness, can't really recommend it highly enough. It sort of plays like one of those real-life, like, tall tale, like, fables that you heard when you were a kid. Like, you know, stuff like, you know, Paul Bunyan or, you know, John Henry or things like that. That, like, but it's, like, grounded in reality and it's just sort of emotional and character-driven. For people who don't know what we're talking about, Robert Duvall plays this old hermit with this sort of crazy reputation about town who decides to throw a funeral party for himself while he's still alive. And he invites everybody to come who has a story about him, which is like everybody in the town. And that's sort of the setup, but it goes in places that, like most good movies, you know, it goes in places that you didn't really expect it to go, and it's...
Do they like dramatize the stories that are being told?
Well, I mean, it's hard for me to say without really spoiling.
Oh, okay.
I mean,
I didn't know if it was like a Big Fish, you know?
Yeah, no. It's not like that. Because while that is, I realize as I just sort of described, it's entirely different than Big Fish.
Yeah.
Well,
it's good for one.
And memorable. I didn't even hate Big Fish.
No, I didn't either, but I've completely forgotten it.
Yeah. See Get Low. Very good.
Okay.
Also, as good as Murray and Duvall are, Lucas Black is in it, and I haven't seen him in anything since Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift.
Is he better in this movie than in Tokyo Drift?
Again, much like Murray in Larger Than Life, I mean, they're all just sort of working to get back to that.
Right. Right.
No. I mean, he was also. I hadn't seen him in anything even before that film. Then since he was the little kid in Sling Blade.
He was in Friday Night Lights.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
He was in All the Pretty Horses.
Okay. Oh wow! You just read all this shit off then.
Yeah.
Good. What else?
Fast and Alabama. Fast and Furious Tokyo. The directorial debut of Antonio Banderas.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I haven't seen that movie.
Yeah, no, me neither, but he was in that, I think.
All right.
And anyway, so, and again, the last thing I saw him, again, Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift, and he's really great in it, sort of and which is saying a lot considering who he's sort of playing opposite. Yeah, see Get Low. It's really, really great. It probably might be hard to find.
It's actually, it's actually playing by me, but I haven't been able to get out to see it yet.
Go ahead and do that.
All right.
I think you'll enjoy it. What have you seen?
Oh gosh. This past weekend I saw Machete.
Okay. I have not seen it.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty much the movie I want it to be, you know, okay. It's the movie that the trailer kind of promises. I honestly wasn't that excited to learn. I'm a big fan of Grindhouse. I like the trailer, but when they said, yeah, we're going to expand it to feature length, that didn't instill a lot of confidence in me. But
I remember talking to you about that.
Yeah.
When like those were, because like there was like, you know, with the internet and stuff, people are just like, you have to make all of these movies. And right. You and I both sort of were like, well, I mean, no, you don't have to. I mean, they just sort of exist as for what they are. But it wasn't like a total disaster, Machete?
No, it was very entertaining. It's not without its problems. It is paced weirdly, and probably about a half hour too long.
Yeah.
You know, the great thing about Planet Terror is that it runs under 90 minutes, and this movie probably could have done the same, but it was very entertaining. And again, we're at the end of summer now, and the only time I'm enjoying myself at the movies is when, you know, silly exploitation movies actually deliver on what they promise.
Much like Piranha 3D.
Right, Piranha 3D, yeah. Unlike The Expendables, which tries but I think fails to deliver on its promise.
Sure.
Piranha 3D delivers.
Yeah.
And so does Machete. I also saw the Drew Barrymore, Justin Long.
Oh, yeah.
Going the Distance. And it's good. I was surprised.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Because the romantic comedy is in such a horrible state right now that it was
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, it was just nice to see a movie about two people that have real problems. They aren't invented for the sake of a movie, you know. No one is trying to trick the other one. No one is keeping back a secret. It's just two honest people who are trying to do the right thing and be together, and they act like human beings, and everyone sort of acts like a human being. There are definitely some elements that lean heavily on romantic comedy cliches, whether it's, you know, the two comic relief best friends or Christina Applegate as just, she's good in the movie, but like, she's just a shrew. She's just this harpy constantly being up everyone's ass. And that, I guess it's supposed to be funny, but it's not. You'd want a character who's slightly less unpleasant. okay, but for the most part, it's good. So that was kind of a surprise.
If I can, that's cool, and that's definitely on my list for sure. I mean, especially if you say it's something of a gem in the, you know, romantic comedy wasteland. If I can backtrack to Machete, though, things I've read and heard, let's get on to the important stuff. Does Jessica Alba give the full Spano in that film?
She does, but not really.
Okay.
There's a scene where she's like standing in a shower and is strategically covered up, but she is technically naked from head to toe.
Got it. Okay. Well,
but I'll be honest. I don't give a shit because I am not a Jessica Alba fan at all.
Okay.
I would have preferred Michelle Rodriguez to Spano it up. The other movie I saw was this last weekend at the Music Box Theater, which comes up a lot on this podcast.
Yes, it does. I'm sad that I don't live in Chicago anymore.
Yeah, right.
Utilize it like I used to. Go ahead.
For the Midnight Show this last weekend, they were doing the 25th anniversary screening of Back to the Future.
Holy shit.
I'm pretty sure I've said it before on this podcast. I'm not positive I have. I definitely have it on the website, fthismovie.blogspot.com. But that is my favorite movie of all time, and also a movie that I would argue is the best movie of all time, and the only acceptable answer to the question, what is the best movie of all time?
Nice.
And it was great to see it in a theater again, and there was a dude there with a DeLorean parked outside, not affiliated with the theater, not affiliated with the movie, just knew they was showing and parked his fucking DeLorean outside and let me sit in it and take a picture, and that was cool.
Oh, that's nice. And you should put that up on the site.
I maybe should. And this is in no way am I attempting to embarrass or out you, but I feel like this is a good point to bring this up.
If you didn't, I was going to.
Yeah, so there's nothing wrong with this fact because obviously you've corrected it. But you just recently saw Back to the Future for the first time, correct?
I did. It was just before I moved out here. It was like maybe 2 months ago.
And what was your reaction to Back to the Future?
It's weird because obviously we've been friends for some time now. I've heard you,
waps. I've never wapsed.
Come on, wax poetic about it, several times, and many people agree with you. And then when you finally see it, your expectations are so high. Yeah. I'm definitely not going to say it disappointed me or anything. But I saw it and I loved it.
Yeah.
It's great. I mean, I don't know about all this, it's like a perfect movie thing, but to some degree it is, for as much as we don't want movies to be about this, it is as much about the movie as it is what you bring to it, in terms of frame of reference, especially when you're dealing with a movie like that has developed this monumental reputation and you somehow sort of missed out on it. I don't want to make it sound like I didn't like Back to the Future. Of course I did. And it's something that I am mad to have missed out on for so long, and something I will definitely see again. But I feel like I'll always sort of be on the periphery of the whole Back to the Future thing, maybe.
Yeah. Well,
what I'm trying to say.
Anytime you kind of come to a movie that late, like you said, you kind of missed out on it. And so now you're seeing it. It's like, yeah, that's good. But you don't have the connection to it that somebody else might. This isn't exactly the same thing because I don't know if this movie is quite as beloved as Back to the Future, but it definitely is in some circles. I was going to talk about this later when we talk about sports movies, but there are quite a few holes in my sports movie knowledge or in terms of what I've seen. And I've never seen The Bad News Bears, the original, and I've never seen Slapshot. And Slapshot, Slapshot is a movie that people fucking love. And
of course,
like you said, I'm sure, tomorrow I could watch Slapshot. It's on Netflix Instant. I plan to, probably not tomorrow, but I'm going to watch it. Okay. And I'll say, Slapshot was entertaining. It's not going to become a movie that I cherish forever because I don't have that relationship with it already. And I think that's similar to what you're saying.
So you get it. Because I absolutely agree. I love Slapshot.
Right.
But you probably won't wrap your arms around it to the degree that everyone else might.
I think you should be careful when you say Back to the Future is not a perfect movie. Like, I think you don't know what the fuck you're talking about, but I don't have a problem with you saying I liked it and that's it,
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Let's talk about Bull Durham. Cause you specifically wanted to talk about Bull Durham. And I said because baseball in the World Series. And you're like, listen, dummy, don't even try and talk like you know what the fuck you're saying when it comes to sports. So I'm going to let you take point and talk about why you were interested in effing Bull Durham.
To accurately discuss my kinship with this movie, we sort of have to learn a little bit about me.
Oh,
so
great.
I know. Kick up your feet. For the last 2 years, I made my bucks as a sports writer in suburban Chicago. I covered mostly high school sports. I've always been into sports and sports movies. And it's something that's always been, I've always read about them and written about them. And it's just always been a big part of my life. I've always had other interests too. I was never some sort of muscle-headed, dolt or anything like that. But sports are very important to me. I watch a lot of them. I often talk at length about them with people who want to hear about it, and sometimes people who don't want to hear about it. Anyway, I've seen a ton of damn sports movies, and it is my opinion, perhaps you can weigh in on this, it's my opinion that baseball across the board makes for the best movies, in my opinion. Maybe we can talk about why that is, or if you disagree, why that isn't later. But anyway, I have seen Bull Durham several times, and I just wanted to watch it again because I feel like it is sort of the definitive baseball movie, to the point where it's simultaneously funny and real without being sort of overly, you know, schmaltzy or preachy about like the dignity of the game and things like that. That's a problem that's come up on subsequent viewings of a movie like Field of Dreams with me. I used to love that movie when I was a kid. That was like my favorite baseball movie, Field of Dreams. And as I've gotten older and watched it more and more, I still enjoy it, but it just plays so heavy-handed and sort of, I keep coming back to schmaltzy for me. It's so sort of toothpaste commercially and all that. But I like Bull Durham because it has sort of an edge, and there's a lot of different things happening other than just a story about baseball. And I think it would appeal to anyone who enjoys a good story being told, regardless of whether or not they're into baseball, which you are not. So, upon your most recent viewing, where did you sort of come down on this?
I like Bull Durham a lot. I always have. I like Ron Shelton's sports movies because I think, like you said, he finds different ways to talk about sports in a way that feels more inside than a lot of sports movies. But there's so much about what you just said that I have to go back to. That's okay. That's all right. Field of Dreams, I think, is an interesting movie. And again, I don't necessarily dislike Field of Dreams. But
neither do I. Yeah.
That is a movie that is beloved by sports fans more than movie fans, obviously. And the reason for that is that it fetishizes sports so much in that, and it draws it into, you know, sports as a way of connecting with
your
father, and it automatically like pulls in guys who are just like, oh, I can talk to my dad about sports, and they cry, and it sports are magic, you know. Baseball isn't just a game, it's this fucking magical thing.
Yes,
but to some extent I would argue that Bull Durham does some of the same thing, and I really became aware of it watching it this time. And again, I like Bull Durham better. Field of Dreams does it in, like you said, a Hallmark card schmaltzy way.
Yeah.
But Bull Durham does it in this other way where it's this kind of it's not magic, but baseball is this – the language in the movie is very poetic at times, and baseball is this thing. It's this poetry. It's philosophy. It's all these different things.
Science even.
Right.
There's talk of metaphysics and transcendentalism and all that. Yeah.
And I think it's fetishizing baseball just as much as Field of Dreams. To me, it's in a more interesting way, but I think a lot of people would probably disagree. And we'll get back to Bull Durham in 1 second, but you had said that you think baseball makes for the best movies, and maybe that's true. But again, I can't name that many really good baseball movies. And maybe it's like in relation to – like it makes the best movies in relation to the game that it's depicting, because I'm not really a baseball fan. I know you are. So the fact that I could enjoy baseball movies and not like baseball is good, because I think there's definitely a handful of good football movies too.
There are, yeah. That's probably next on my list as far as which sports make it. But I mean, if you look,
but I tend to like football more, so there's a smaller gap, I guess, between the game and the movies than there is with baseball.
And it should be noted, I also probably in my sports, you know, and I'm much more passionate about sports than you are. Not that that really matters, we can talk about how much that matters when we get a little further into this. But I also like football more than baseball. Just as a person. But that being said, I feel like baseball, I think maybe because it's this, again, this is just a theory, and this is how I sort of arrived at this. I was thinking about this earlier when I was trying to, you know, make a concerted effort not to sound like a babbling moron here.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah, right. It's not like I've gone on and on for long stretches. I think maybe because it's the oldest game, and therefore they've started playing it since pretty much after the Civil War. And therefore there's been so much room for tradition and sort of lore. Baseball is often the most like mythological of the games. You see that in movies like The Natural.
Would you say it's also the most racist game?
Well, for a time, definitely. And actually, I mean, you're making jokes, which I appreciate. is because we often make jokes here, but that's made for a lot of like interesting movies. There's even one little moment in a film called League of Their Own. I don't know how you feel about League of Their Own, but one of my favorite moments is that is when the older African American woman sort of saunters up in her dress and
oh, I forgot about that scene.
Throws the ball back in the infield.
It's a barf. That is a barf moment, but I like that movie. I forgot about that movie actually. There are some good baseball movies. I've never seen The Natural.
Oh, okay. You should see The Natural, and you should definitely see Bad News Bears.
Yeah, right. I've never seen Bad News Bears. So I guess what are the ones I like? I like Bull Durham. I like 8 Men Out. I like.
Do you like Major League?
Major League, of course, is.
And now listen to me. I can't think of anything.
Hardball, of course.
Hardball is great, of course. For love of the game.
I like it when G-Baby dies. Yeah, well, Kevin Costner for Love of the Game completes his baseball trilogy.
It does. I was sort of kidding about For Love of the Game.
There's I know you were. That movie's watchable, but kind of it terrible. Is.
Kelly Preston sort of torpedoes it. I mean, I like her normally, but she's all wrong for that. Anyway, let's get this thing back on track.
Back to Bull Durham.
There we go. The reasons that I like Bull Durham, I guess, here's a good place to start. First and foremost, I don't want to make this into a here's why Bull Durham is better than Field of Dreams podcast, because I don't think that's too interesting. But I mean, it's just, it's a Kevin Costner baseball movie released relatively close together in time. And it just sort of jumps to me. This is a movie that, Ron Shelton wrote and directed. It should be noted Ron Shelton did spend time as a minor league baseball player for a really long time. I'm sure you knew that. I don't know if everyone else did. He knows of what he speaks. And I think you can really tell because this is a movie that really loves its characters. And I think you can point to a couple of instances where that's readily apparent. And it's that both Costner, who plays Crash Davis, the sort of older, wiser catcher, and Tim Robbins, who plays Nuke Lelouch, who's sort of the young, up-and-coming, flame-throwing pitcher, who's got all the talent in the world but can't sort of get it all straight. They both get really, really great reveals and like introductions into the movie. And whenever filmmakers take the time to do that, I always tend to notice and say, well, they clearly want you to feel certain ways about these people. The first time you see Tim Robbins, you don't actually see Tim Robbins. You see his naked ass while he's, having sex with this, girl just before he's about to make his debut for the team. That tells you everything you need to know about his character at that moment. He's, good, but clearly not taking this nearly as seriously as he should be. And then on the flip side, the first time you see Costner, he's come into the manager's office and he has that great line and says, who are you? And he says, I'm the player to be named later, which just says so much about like, I'm good, but everyone just sort of forgot about me.
That was, I think, the original name for the movie.
Yes, I'm here, but everyone just...
No. The player to be named later, for real.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That kind of says it. I mean, I guess they probably got away from that because they didn't want to... It's not ultimately just a movie about Kevin Costner. That's probably why they...
And it's not the catchiest of titles.
Well, neither is Bull Durham, really.
I don't even understand Bull Durham. They're the Durham Bulls, but
They are the Durham Bulls. I don't really get it either.
Would you really call a movie Bear Chicago?
No, you wouldn't. And not Cubs Chicago or anything like that. But it sounds kind of cool, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. It's a good name for a movie.
Going. Bull Durham. At no point do you feel like it's getting sort of phoned in or that anything is overly false. For as many problems as the movie has, and it has some... I feel like you probably might have more than I do because I hold it in very high regard. I never feel like I'm getting cheated out of any sort of character, action. Like, I feel like they're really well-developed and really well-drawn in terms of how they interact with each other and how they sort of move through the story.
This is not necessarily a flaw with the movie. This is more about me just getting older and more cynical and insufferable to be around. Because I found myself watching it this time feeling like this dialogue, a lot of the dialogue is a little too self-consciously prosy and a little bit too up its own ass with how impressed it is. Costner's got that speech about what he believes in, and it's very much the movie stops so he can deliver this speech that people will quote, and they can show it in the trailers, and you know, and at the same time, like, that's just me nitpicking and being too hard on a movie because, gosh, really, I should be excited that here's a movie that took time to create interesting dialogue that is original and funny and profane and knows something about something.
Yeah.
The best, you know, so I'm aware of my own insufferability. Because at times, yes, it rings false to me. And some of that is probably by design. Ron Shelton is obviously, you know, he's taken these characters in this story that's very much at ground level. It's about this minor league team. They're all just working class people. But he's treating it as sort of this larger than life thing because they love this thing that is bigger than all of them.
Yeah. I actually love the way that it plays both sides of that story because I enjoy the sort of like intellectual ruminations about the game,
right,
and about what it can do for people and what it means to people, while at the same time sort of ingraining you in the everyday, like, sort of down and dirty sort of stuff, particularly with minor league baseball, because it's such a rough and tumble sort of environment. You see things like that with the way they deal with all the superstitions and the way they just need, you know, rainouts. And, like, there's so many little moments, like, at one point, a guy strikes out, and you hear the PA announcer, who's that great, that woman with that great North Carolina drawl, and she just says, "Too bad, Butch." Like, it's such a person, like, it's just little stuff like that. I found myself just sort of smiling and being like, oh, you know, that's just the way that stuff goes. And I feel like there's an atmosphere that gets created, and I'm all about that. And
there, there's definitely a lot of atmosphere. And again, part of the issue may be that, again, while I like that the movie takes a point of view about baseball that a lot of movies don't, when it starts to really mythologize things, maybe that's just where it leaves me a little bit cold because I don't share those same feel. You know, if I'm somebody who's crazy about baseball, then here's somebody talking about it in a way that I haven't heard that describes that describes the way that I feel but have never articulated, and that's all great. But if I'm not somebody who loves baseball, and I'm not, it may just leave me a little cold. Again, that's okay. I don't think it's a fault of the movie. I really don't, because I think plenty of good movies have been made about subjects that I know nothing about, that I care nothing about, but it's able to make me care, and that's what this movie does. My favorite stuff in the movie is some of what you were talking about, not sort of the philosophical ruminations on baseball, because that's just sort of ethereal and up its own ass. I like when it's very obvious that Ron Shelton has knows what the fuck he's talking about, and Kevin Costner's got that great thing about the shower shoes with the
fungus
on them. And he says, you know, when you make it in the majors, you can have fungus on your shower shoes because it makes you eccentric. But
the press will say you have color.
Right. But here in minor leagues, you're just a slob. And that's a great observation, and such a true observation about the way that we treat sports figures or whatever. And that kind of shit I really, really like.
Mm-hmm. I like that stuff, too. I would say maybe a fault of the movie is that it, I mean, I think it would be safe to color this movie as ambitious. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, definitely.
In that it wants to be a lot of different things and say a lot of different things, because there's so many. I mean, there's a love triangle story, and there's sort of just a story about a baseball team that's bad and then gets good. And then there's a great, you know, mentor apprentice story happening. Any of those things could conceivably be probably their own movie and just that one thing playing out.
Right.
And they all sort of get mixed together. The thing you just highlighted is, you know, related to the, you know, mentor and apprentice story between Robbins and Costner. And I think any scene with the two of them where he's giving him any sort of advice is definitely when the movie is at its best. I think, I mean, if you're going to prioritize what's the most important to the movie, and to the movie being a well-told story, that's at the top in terms of a priority list. I also enjoy the way that it's, I mean, it's like a really sort of manly, you know, rated R. It's rated R, correct? It is.
Yeah, oh, yeah,
there's,
yeah.
Like, there's like naked people and shit in it.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's, you know, sort of a, you know, rough around the edges sports movie that has this eloquent female protagonist who has really strong, like, feminine qualities, and it doesn't shy away from that at all. That really struck me this time, that I'm like, oh, this is really sort of a bold choice for just something that's on the surface just a masculine 80s baseball movie.
Mm-hmm.
That and I think Susan Sarandon does a really nice job making a lot of that fly. Now you just said a lot of her stuff that is sort of the more philosophical stuff, it didn't really jive with you, but wouldn't you agree that that's a really interesting choice to have her be the person who is sort of driving that part of the story?
Yes and no. And okay. Here's why. I like Susan Sarandon a real lot. I think she's great in the movie. I think she has an interesting character to play. I think she's very sexy. I think her scenes with Tim Robbins are good. I think her scenes with Kevin Costner are good. I like all of that. I just feel like she is such a writer's construct. The fact that she
That's
is
true.
The yeah. fact that she is the gateway into the movie sort of rings false to me, that it was just Ron Shelton sort of having this idea, hey, what if it's a woman telling the story? Okay, but to what end? And I guess my problem with the character is that she's such an obviously constructed, like, male fantasy.
Okay.
I don't necessarily disagree with you that she has feminine qualities, but to me it's more about she exists because, like, isn't she great? She loves baseball so much that all she wants to do is fuck me and tell me how to play baseball better. And isn't that great? And to me it's just this sort of this male fantasy of this super cool woman whose two passions in life are baseball and fucking me, and isn't that great?
And I don't even disagree with anything you said, as far as that's the purpose she serves. But again, this is where you just sort of bring different things to a movie in terms of, like, I mean, the very things that you dislike about it are the things that I sort of applaud as interesting choices.
Well, it's not that it's not an interesting choice. I just think the movie is trying to have it both ways, and I don't think it succeeds. I think it's trying to present her as a very strong, independent character who does these things, you know, very much of her own free will, and she's in touch with her sexuality, and she's liberated sexually, and all that is great. But to me, it's false, because it's very much written on a man's terms.
Okay.
She's a male fantasy of a woman. She never really succeeds in being a true three-dimensional woman. As much as Susan Sarandon tries, and if it were anybody else, I think that character could potentially torpedo the movie.
I could not, like, I kept thinking about that too, and that's why I really applauded the choice, even if only because it could have gone so bad. Now, that's not exactly, like, the highest praise when you come out of it saying, well, it could have been awful. you know, she really made it work. I can't really argue with much of what you're saying. I also am just sort of fascinated with the way they sort of break her down as the movie goes along, because she seems to be, like you said, I mean, if she's just this male construct who's driven by these two passions, mm-hmm. baseball and sex, and then it seems like, you know, she's got it pretty well figured out. She's done this for many seasons where she just picks a player to make, like, her project. We have no reason to believe that that's ever been a problem for her, but that, you know, over time, this you know, particular year becomes a problem for her for, you know, a multitude of different reasons, mostly that there's two men in the picture and that one of them becomes a lot better and more superstitious than she might have thought. And I think I like that she's not made infallible.
Right.
Like because she contradicts herself a lot. Because
right.
She says, like, you know, she makes many, many, statements about, like, the connection between sex and baseball. And then when she herself is so pent up because you know, he is on a winning streak and therefore he won't. And he's on a winning streak and he hasn't been having sex with her. So he's going to keep doing that. She then says, like, there's no connection between sex and baseball. It was all like, I enjoy it's it, as much as that's a contradiction. And in a certain context, that's bad writing. In this case, I think it's actually good writing because people do that when they become desperate and frustrated.
Well, and it's an admission on her part that she's full of shit. That
yeah,
essentially they're all full of shit.
Yeah.
And no, I like that about the movie, that she's willing to say, like, listen, I'm full of shit. And for all of my philosophizing and all of this moral code that I live my life by, it's all horse shit. And I like that, you know, her connection to Kevin Costner is interesting because they're both very much at the same place in their lives. They're getting older and they have loved this thing forever. And ultimately, what has it done for them? You know, it's always been them for their to love and they've given themselves to it completely, but it hasn't ever really given them anything back except for the ability to continue loving it.
Yeah.
And so it's timed, you know, Tim Robbins sort of represents where she's been and what she has done for so many seasons, as you pointed out. And Kevin Costner, I think, sort of represents moving forward and kind of settling down and finding someone who understands her and who shares her love for something, but who will love her back in a way that baseball never has. And, you know, the same goes for Costner. Who, by the way, this is maybe watching this movie, and I think he's great in the movie. This might be the only movie that Kevin Costner is ever like cool in. I've liked him in movies, but he's never really like a cool guy.
He's sort of a cool guy in The Upside of Anger.
I think. I like that movie. I think he used to be cool in that movie.
Okay,
I don't know if he's cool anymore. He's just kind of a fuck up now, you know. But in Bull Durham, like, he's genuinely cool. He walks into a room and he's cool, right? And he says cool shit, and he's just cool.
You didn't think he was cool in 3,000 Miles to Graceland?
He tried to be cool, but he was just a balding Elvis. You know, he's been earnest, and he's been nice, and he's been boring, and he's been terrible. But yeah, he's cool in Bull Durham.
Yeah.
He has a swagger that he doesn't have, I don't think, in any other movie.
I agree. And that's a testament, I think, both to him and the way the character is written.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously anybody would kind of kill for that kind of a part, you know.
Yeah, for sure. It's pretty clear at this point in our discussion that I like this more than you did, and that you said the things that leave you sort of cold are the things that wax poetic about the, you know, sort of higher levels of the game and what it can mean and all that.
Yeah.
And that sort of brings me to the reason that I wanted to discuss this in the first place. And that's about, like you said, in a perfect world, a story should be told in such a way that it shouldn't matter how much you know about the subject matter. It should just be a well-told story and you should enjoy it.
Yeah.
And there are parts of this that don't speak to you because you're not a crazy baseball fan like a lot of people who like this movie are. Now, that being said, so in that regard, the movie fails on that level for you.
Not really. Now, it's just not.
I mean,
I wouldn't say it's not the movie's fault. It's just that those parts are not for me. But that's okay, because they are for someone else. Yeah. I wouldn't necessarily say it's a shortcoming of the movie. It's just something that I don't connect with.
Okay, let me ask you this question. If you had to pinpoint, as a person who's not very into sports, talking to me, a person who is very much into sports, if you had to pinpoint your favorite sports movie, what would it be? And in what ways? Because Bull Durham is probably my favorite sports movie.
It's probably mine, too. I don't mean to give impression that I don't like the movie.
I didn't think you did. I didn't know if there was a sports movie that that didn't have that one little hang up about stuff being not for you.
No, no, there's definitely not. And if there is, then that movie sucks because it's so generic and it's so willing to like speak down to everyone that that movie fucking sucks. What's great about Bull Durham is that it's a movie with a worldview, and so few movies have a yeah. way of looking at the world. And Bull Durham, in every frame, you really get the sense that like Ron Shelton has a point of view about not only what he's talking about, but the way he sees the world. And a lot of sports movies attempt to have that worldview, but again, it turns into just this generic bullshit talking about the game, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Here's a sports movie that's not good, but that I like, and I watch it probably once a year, is Oliver Stone's Any Given Sunday.
Oh, I really like Any Given Sunday.
Right, and it's filled with problems.
A big apologist.
Yeah, right, it is, right. It's filled with problems. And there's so much empty bullshit talk about this great game, and you have
yes,
to do it for the game,
point.
And we're the modern-day gladiators, and it's,
yes.
you know...
Interspliced with footage of Ben-Hur.
Right.
To really drive
right.
the point home.
And so maybe you could say, like, oh, well, that movie has a point of view. And yeah, it does, but it's certainly nothing we haven't heard before. It's just this sort of generic waxing rhapsodic about the game, always in capitals and underlined, you know, that's unfortunately the yep. attitude that so many sports movies take. And I think Bull Durham is about way more than that. And yeah, I definitely, if it's not my favorite, I don't necessarily know what is. I would put it in my top three.
Yeah, I would actually, upon thinking about it, and maybe we disqualify this, because it's a documentary. My favorite sports movie is Hoop Dreams.
Well,
but
sure.
But I think we're probably. I mean, we probably disqualify that if we're talking about just fiction
right.
movies, right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I would say so.
Well, good. But yeah, as far as fiction sports movies go, this is, and maybe there's not even one. There's just probably sort of a group at the top, and this is definitely in it.
Right, and I would include other Ron Shelton movies there as well, like Tin Cup.
Love Tin Cup.
Yeah, Tin Cup is great.
We were to, you know, to let the viewers a little bit on the. You know, behind the scenes of F This Movie, we were between two Kevin Costner, Ron Shelton, you know, projects here
right.
for this one. We were going to either do this or maybe Tin Cup. And we went with this just because we thought it may be resonant with more people. But we both like Tin Cup a lot.
And much of what I'm saying about Bull Durham also applies
for a lot of the same reasons yes.
to Tin Cup. And it really, I mean, in so many ways, it's such a similar movie because even what I'm saying I love about Bull Durham, the way it views the world, Tin Cup almost has the exact same worldview, which I guess is fine. It's written by the same guy, but it's
yeah.
essentially, you know, Bull Durham on the golf course.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? I actually, and to devolve a little bit, I think he's sort of cool in that movie. Kevin Costner. I realize
yeah,
he is a guy
yeah.
who has problems and like he's not made much of himself, but
right.
I find that sort of has like an anti-hero coolness about it.
Yeah, no, he definitely is. He just feels he feels more washed up in that movie. I never get the sense in Bull Durham I never get the sense in Bull Durham that he's washed up.
Yeah, he's sort of maybe getting there soon.
Yeah.
Not washed up.
Yeah, he still seems to be in his prime in Bull Durham, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I find myself, again, I hinted at this earlier, I love so many little moments that really good movies so often do in just such a sort of indefinable way that we'll go ahead and try to define. Just sort of little character things that happen. I love when Costner goes over to grab the rag from the Bat Boy and he says, get a hit, Crash. And he just tells the kid to shut up.
Yeah, that's great.
And I've read a lot of things, I think, and I'm pretty sure that's an improv by Costner. and he actually made the kid cry. I've read that in interviews and sort of things written about this movie, which I just love. I also love, this is something I wanted to talk about. For as much as we're talking about how it's a pretty much a very well-told story, it's not, you know, for as much as a lot of different sports movies try and be really showy in terms of filmmaking technique, that's not really among the chief goals of Bull Durham, I don't think.
No.
As far as like, you know, technical prowess. That being said, I do really enjoy both sequences where Susan Sarandon, Annie, passes the notes into the dugout and then they get passed back to her in one single take, and you're just sort of taken from one world to the next,
right,
in one shot, and then back again. I think that's sort of cute.
Yeah, it's in
a way that feels organic and not, look at me, I'm doing a cool one take thing.
Right. Well, it's a movie that's very much about three characters instead of about baseball.
Yeah.
And it's one of the few sports movies that doesn't climax with the big game.
Yeah.
Which is nice. I don't need to sit there and worry that Tim Robbins is going to pitch a no-hitter, or that, you know, they're going to win the pennant or whatever the fuck you win in minor league. I don't know, but like I'm just glad that it's not about the big game. I will say that the last 20 minutes, you know, very much segue into being purely about the relationship between Kevin Costner and Susan Sarandon, and that's fine, and I'm interested in that relationship, and I don't mind a movie that shifts gears, you know, but it feels a little off structurally.
Right. Yeah, and you sent me an email that said that just in advance of this podcast.
Yeah.
You very eloquently said, "What's up with that last 20 minutes?" and just so we're clear, I mean, I know how long 20 minutes is, obviously, but where does it start? Does it start to go south for you? I guess we're going to sort of, I mean, we're talking about third act problems here.
Right.
So I guess we might spoil it a little bit. Do the problems start for you when Tim Robbins gets his big bit of news?
That seems to be where it kind of shifts gears for those last 20 minutes. And again, I don't mind because I like spending time with those people and I think they're good together. And the movie is definitely interested in exploring that relationship. But I think
definitely
it needed to happen maybe a little earlier. It just feels a little bit rushed.
Okay.
Particularly the whole false crisis that occurs.
Yeah.
In the last like 5 minutes of the movie, like, that, you know.
Yeah, that's the bigger problem for me, because I actually don't mind all that stuff. And with Tim Robbins sort of, you know, going to the next phase of his career.
No, that's all fine for me.
And that's all great. And he and Costner have that great scene where, you know, they sort of, you know, have that opposition in the bar. And then he sort of apologizes to him the next day. And I feel like it really earns those moments. But yeah, that specifically the last, like, not even 20 minutes, but yeah, the last 5 minutes or so where he's, you know, for a second, I think it's literally just going to be a movie that ends with two people fucking each other for the rest of time, as for all intents and purposes, which I'm so on board with. More movies need to end like that, as far as I'm concerned. And then it does some different things. And I'm not... For as much as I'm praising its narrative, you know, qualities here, by the end of the movie, I'm not entirely sure how I'm supposed to feel about all the things.
Right.
And maybe that's okay.
Yeah.
But it sort of gets, yeah, because I mean, it falls a little bit flat in that, you know, it becomes so character driven that you sort of forget about the game. But I kind of like that. And your point about it sort of avoiding the peril of the big game plot device is really, really well done, because there's so many, I mean, because there's only two ways you can do that. Like, I mean, they're either going to win or they're going to lose. And
right.
Like, you know, the old, you know, cliche is the team wins the big game. And then you had to go so against that, like, no, you lose, but you learn things.
Right. That became the trend in like the last decade or so.
Well, sure. And then, you know, and then to some degree you swing back to the old one, but then you're just left with, there's only two ways. Like, they're either going to win the game or they're going to lose the game.
Right.
Unless it's a soccer movie and they could tie.
Right.
But you know,
Tin Cup, I will say, sort of found a way around that.
That's the best part about Tin Cup.
Yeah.
That last, it's actually been making the rounds on like Versus. It's Tin Cup has been on like the last like four or five nights,
awesome.
And I've always happened to catch the last 20 minutes or so.
Okay.
And, well, we certainly won't spoil Tin Cup here,
right? But it does, it does kind of find a way around what you're describing.
Yes, for sure. It does that very well. And this, you know, Bull Durham completely says, well, let's just not really worry about that. It's more about the people than the game anyway.
Right. Yeah. That's not really what it's about, because even though the team starts to do better, it's not like we're so invested. It's not Major League where it's like, oh, we have to follow them all the way up to the big game, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't mind the big game, you know, whatever. It's fine, but it's nice to see a sports movie that isn't interested in that. That isn't purely results driven. And now you had said something when we were emailing about talking about this movie. You had said something about Tim Robbins.
Oh, yeah.
His form or something.
Yes. It's like a really, really sort of much discussed joke among people who are really big fans of baseball and people who like this movie, which most baseball fans love this movie. He has awful pitching mechanics.
Okay.
He has, and if you don't watch much baseball, you wouldn't notice and don't care. But it's so like his motion. I mean, it's just so he's so tall, and there are tall pitchers. Like they exist. It's not like he's too tall for the part or anything like that. But like, it's just this loopy, weird delivery that is not at all believable. And for as much as that should take me out of the movie, it's actually over time, like developed. It's like such a joke about the movie. It's like, oh well, yeah, and Tim Robbins, you know, kooky throwing motion. That it's got like some charm to it.
Okay.
And actually, sort of is okay within the rules of the movie because he's like not actually that accurate.
Right.
He just throws it really hard. He can't always throw it straight.
Right.
So in that way, it kind of works.
Right.
On another level. To some degree, it's just hard for me to buy Tim Robbins as a world-class athlete of any sort. He's just sort of tall and weird.
Right.
Are there
actors who have played pitchers convincingly?
I mean, well, Kevin Costner in For Love of the Game.
Yeah, he's good in that. I mean, I know he's like pretty athletic.
Well, and he played some baseball in college.
Oh, okay.
And so he's really good, and he has really good form, and like, you know, it just makes sense when he's on the mound. Another story about someone who's bad at it, so bad in fact that it altered the way they had to edit the movie. Have you seen Summer Catch with Freddie Prinze Jr.?
I don't remember 2 seconds of Summer Catch, but I absolutely have seen Summer Catch.
If you were to rewatch Summer Catch, you will notice something really, really weird. You wouldn't have noticed.
I would notice that I'm rewatching I'm Summer Catch
now. Well, that is weird, and I don't know why you would do that. No one should. Don't see it again, because I'm just going to tell you the most interesting thing about Summer Catch right now. And it's got nothing to do with the plot or any sort of a spoiler or anything.
Or Jessica Biel in a Summer bikini.
Well, that's true. When she was like still really, really great looking. yeah, because she's such a hag now. What am I talking about? In Summer Catch, there's not one single shot of Freddie Prinze Jr. throwing a baseball.
Really?
He is like the main character who's the troubled pitcher.
Right.
There's not one single shot of him like throwing a baseball that's clearly him. They always cut or it's from behind or and it's clearly a double. And like the things that you read, as the stories go, he was so bad they couldn't teach him to like look good doing it. And you know, it's Freddie Prinze Jr. I mean, he seems like he would be a pretty athletic guy.
Well, what's fascinating to me about that then is that he was cast for his acting ability. That someone said, "Well, shit, we cast this guy who can't pitch at all, but we gotta have him. He's Freddie Prinze Jr."
Of course. Before you start making fun, I mean, he was riding pretty high at that point in terms of like.
Yeah, there was about 6 months there.
Marketability.
Where he was in movies.
He was in movies. Some people willfully paid for tickets.
I found him unconvincing as a wing commander.
Didn't he play like an art dealer in a movie with like Monica Potter?
Yeah, somebody shits in that movie. That was during that run where there was a scene in every comedy where somebody had to like shit uncontrollably. I can't remember if it's him or Monica Potter that shits uncontrollably in that movie. What the fuck is that? Head Over Heels? Is that what that movie's called?
Head Over Heels. Yeah, that's Head Over Heels. What's the one with Julia Stiles? It was Down to You.
Down to You. That's where he drinks the shampoo.
Fuck.
We've gone
totally off the rails here. We're talking about the Freddie Prinze Jr. canon.
Yeah,
he was great in Scooby-Doo 2.
Monsters Unleashed.
Let's get back on point.
Yes, Summer Catch is a great baseball movie.
That is the point. Let's see. Is there anything in terms of like any sort of lingering, impression that you'll take with it with you after this viewing that was maybe different?
Not necessarily. I mean, I've only seen it 3 or 4 times. Again, I like that it is its own thing, even within the genre of sports movies, which I used to really think that while I'm not so much into sports because they involve being outdoors, and I would much rather be in the dark.
With your computer.
That's right. While I was not so much into sports, that I always liked sports movies. And thinking about that for this podcast, I don't know that that's necessarily true, because while there's a handful of sports movies that I like, even some really shitty ones like The Replacements.
I love The Replacements.
Yeah, right. And you can't defend that movie. We actually, a listener actually requested on our Facebook page that we F that movie, and maybe we still will, but I don't know what to say about it, because it's like, I recognize that it's terrible, but I still totally dig that movie. And since it's in constant rotation on TBS, I've seen it a lot.
Yeah. That's in heavy rotation. Yeah.
And I like that movie. So there are sports movies that I really like, but there's also just a ton that I don't give a shit about. Most of them came like during the 2000s, because Disney really started cranking out the based on true events sports, whether it's Miracle or The Rookie or the Mark Wahlberg one where he's playing for the
Invincible.
Yeah.
And then there's Remember the Titans and Glory Road and the Gridiron Gang.
Coach Carter,
of course. We're forgetting some things.
And I just don't give a shit about that, because Blindside,
I mean, is fuck that shit.
I don't know if I would even call The Blind Side a sports movie, you know?
Yeah, maybe not. It's a fucking shitty movie. Is what it is.
But those movies are very clearly made. Like, I think there's a large audience of people who only like those movies.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And people go see them. I mean,
there's a market. They're made for people who like sports, but not necessarily movies. And as somebody who likes movies, those movies are hard to sit through. There are some that are done well. I mean, Remember the Titans is a fine movie. Like, it's done well. I just don't really give a shit. But as somebody who likes, who holds movies more dearly than sports, those movies aren't really made for me. And so I can't necessarily say that I like sports movies as a general rule, because there's a lot that I don't give a shit about. But Bull Durham would definitely be one of my favorites, if not my favorite.
I'm a person who holds movies and sports in probably about equal regard in terms of the things that interest me.
Mm-hmm.
And in that way, I mean, maybe it's not fair to say more, but I'm very, very particular about the way sports are portrayed in movies. Because I carry, God, I'm going to sound, there's no way for me to say this without sounding pretentious. So I'll just be pretentious.
We're way past that.
Yeah. That's a good point. I like to think that I have both the mentality of liking sports and demanding quality filmmaking, that I have a pretty high standard for what makes a good sports movie. And in terms of, you know, what I like out of those, Bull Durham has always provided me with that, and it was no different on this viewing.
All right, well, I guess that's gonna wrap up our discussion of Bull Durham and sports movies. Did it fulfill your wildest dreams? I mean, is it everything you hoped it would be? I feel like I might have let you down.
No. I was actually just about to make a comment unprompted, like, at all.
Oh, so now it sounds totally insincere.
Sounds like we set it up.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, I was actually going, no, I'm really glad we did this. As two people who are pretty far apart in terms of how they feel about sports, but pretty close in terms of how they feel about movies. I'm really glad that this is going to be on the internet for everyone to listen to. I think that they're going to be better for it.
This is going to be on the internet.
It is on the real live internet.
Remember, you can check out our website, fthismovie.blogspot.com. Email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Be friends with us on Facebook. And what else? What am I forgetting?
That's about it.
Yeah.
It's at this point, I can only say, we must have 3 strikes, because we're out of here.
I am dead inside.
Yeah.
Bye, everybody.
Went that later.
I went.